Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to may recover from alcoholism. Therefore, we ask all attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment, refraining from any behavior that compromises another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about safety and AA, see the AA safety card, and safety and AA are common welfare. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Nikki will now read the steps.
Hi, I'm Nikki. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Nikki.
Here are the 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Nikki. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. All of our meetings are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA's statement of unity and anonymity, and therefore ask our speakers to identify their first name only and to refrain from using profanity. Tonight, our first 10-minute speaker is Gretchen.
And I'm an alcoholic.
Congratulations.
I have no mental defense against the first drink. Absolutely none. My sobriety date is November 22nd, 2013. It took a long, rough road to have that be my last date. I hope that stays one day at a time. what was I like before I had the first drink? Well, I was really uptight all the time. I always felt on edge. I always felt like worried about stuff. My mother was an alcoholic. That's not why I'm an alcoholic, but that did set the tone of things, you know. She was abusive towards my father. She would throw things at him. My father was a workaholic and he was also her enabler. And he wasn't home very much. He worked really hard and, you know, I used him too. He was a great enabler. He bailed me out of jail a couple times too. But anyway, so he always gave me money, you know, Dad, I need this. And you get bailed out, you know, and he always came for the rescue, which was cool. You know, kept me out there for a little bit longer. So anyway, I'll never forget my first drink and I will never forget my last one. And pretty much everything in between that was a lot of blacking out. A good chunk of my life was like a black hole. And I was out there for about 26 years. So my first drink, I was about maybe 12, almost 13. I remember it was a nice spring day. I was by myself. And I just wanted to try a little taste of whatever that wine stuff was that my mom had. And when she had the parties and stuff, they would get funny, you know what I mean? And like stupid and giggly. So I wanted some of that. And I tried it, and I will never forget the way it made me feel. Instantaneously, I had that first drink and everything was going to be just fine. I was right where I was supposed to be and it was beautiful. And I didn't want to stop that. So I did everything in my power to get my hands on that. And I remember before I started drinking, I had a lot of friends in school. I was in, just through sixth grade going into the seventh, and it was like, I hung around with everyone. There was no like real, I wasn't a member of any clique, but I remember like I wanted to party, and I showed one of my friends, and she was like, really into the athletics and really, one of like the high end kids. And I ran to her. I'm like, dude, you got to have some of this. And she's like, you don't look good and you're scaring me. And okay, that was not happening. That was a buzzkill. So I went to this one girl who was kind of like in the rough crowd, the people who smoked in the bathroom, the people who always got in trouble. They kind of did some other drugs and stuff. And she looked at me and she said, you got a problem. Okay, why don't you try smoking weed? She tried to get me to smoke weed and I tried it and I didn't like it. And she just continued to push weed on me. And I'm like, I don't like this. Why don't you try it? And so I couldn't hang out with her either. My quest to find other people to drink like me was a very difficult thing to do. Towards the middle of my drinking, my first rehab, I was 19. I was rapidly drinking alone. By the time I went to my first rehab, I was by myself, and I was drinking around the clock. And I did try to stop drinking abruptly one day. I had a seizure in the middle of, it was in a public place. It was a petite mall. I ended up in the hospital. And, from then I'm like, okay, I need a detox. And then it was off with the detox thing. I was like, in and out of detoxes, in and out of detoxes. I remember I got on my detox, like, what's your game plan? What are you going to do? I don't know. Go back to my boyfriend and he's an alcoholic, but he won't let me drink because he thinks I'm an alcoholic. I was forbidden to drink. And my mother will let me use her car, but I'm going to live with her too. They knew I didn't have a chance. Let me know when my 5 minutes is coming up. How you doing? Anyway, sorry. It was just a dump. The progression of my disease, I just took a nosedive. I mean, I was like a bottom of the barrel drunk from the get. And, there was like a lot of like, I think I landed in this relationship with this guy who was in recovery. I stayed at like a year recovery, like transitional place, got sober there. And then within a year living with this guy, we started our own business and I started smoking crack. It was just like, what the, this is the progression of the disease, and it just got worse. It always gets worse. It never gets any better. Okay. Two DUIs later, I'm into Boston, I got my, the court order to come here. And I show up and the Beacon Group is one of my first Boston meetings I had to go to because I lived in Somerville. At this point I was waking up on park benches. 5 minutes. Good. We'll get into the hope. I'm out of this junk. Because it just gets worse and worse and worse. It doesn't get better. I got a lot of 24-hour chips, and thank God I kept on coming back here because I knew there was something you guys had that I wanted. I wish my recovery in my spiritual journey and my connecting with my higher power was as rapid of a progression as my drinking was. No, that's not the case. I didn't have a lot of the willingness in the beginning. I had to pray for a lot of willingness. I have a daily reprieve. I got a sponsor at first and then I just didn't call the sponsor and I relapsed. I joined a group, but I only went once every couple months I relapsed. I had to come back. I was a 1-2-3 stepper. Didn't do the step four. Relapsed again. And each time I got like 3 months, 6 months, a couple months, back and forth. I mean, some of you people know it. We're there when I've been back and forth, I just kept coming back, but I had to half measures avail you nothing. I had to do all of it. I had to continue doing all of it. I had to call women. I had to do things I didn't really feel like doing. A lot of stuff that was inconvenient. Thank God I got to be the greeter. I got to do all the timer, that was an uncomfortable thing, and it's just like, oh, my sponsor got me into service. I had to be the district treasurer for District 14. That was a lot of fun. There was a lot of uncomfortable incidences with that. I learned a lot. I kept coming back. I do a lot of things that are inconvenient. I stay in the middle. But this is for relapse prevention, because the thing is, I don't know when my next drink is going to be. If I'm not doing the spiritual work and involved in fellowship and service, someone pushes a drink my way, I'm just going to say, sure, I'll take that. Glass, a nice glass of Pinot Grigio, I'm all in. You know, it's not vodka, because I just drank out of the plastic bottle of Smirnoff. Two nips and a half pint, that's what it was, on a park bench in the Boston Common. Wake up in the morning, freezing cold, sub-zero temperatures. That was how I drank alone. You know, so a nice glass of Pinot Grigio or Pinot Noir, I mean, what's this going to happen there? You know, so this is what I do. I stay in service, I call my sponsor, I have a couple of sponsees, I work with them. It's inconvenient. Coming here is inconvenient. I love being here, but driving here is not so convenient. What do? I say, yes, you know, what else is inconvenient? Jail. Jail. It's really inconvenient. Okay? So is a probation officer. Okay? So is hiring an attorney for about $1,000. I mean, no, $10,000. You know? So is blowing into a breathalyzer device in your car to get it started, and the rolling restops as well. Because you have to blow into it every like 10 minutes or whatever when you're driving. Getting it installed and getting it deinstalled. Getting your learner's permit at the age of 30 something and then having to take a driving test as well. That is all very inconvenient. So when I get a little busy because I got to do something like get a sponsee. Because when my, you know, I got elected as big DCM and my sponsor was like, are you going to newcomer meetings? Are you going to newcomer meetings? I'm like, I don't have time for newcomer meetings, and I don't have time for a sponsee. I'm busy, I'm working so many hours a week, and I'm like, and I'm the DCM, and I don't know how I'm gonna have time to do anything. She's like, get yourself a sponsee. I'm like, oh my God. Well, you know what, I have two. So I'm like, and you know what, I make time for them. So when it's inconvenient, what have I got left? 1 minute. All right, good, we're good. All right, I just do what it takes. I'm willing to go to any lengths to keep my stay sober one day at a time, and that's it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Gretchen. We will now serve the seventh tradition. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, GSO has withdrawn approximately $4.5 million from the reserve fund. AA's usual suggestion is a $2 donation per meeting. We are passing the basket, but you may also observe the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo. There's a QR code in the basket, and our Venmo handle is at beacon-group, not underscore dash. Again, although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $400 per month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, me. You can see me with any questions. I probably won't have an answer, but we'll try. Thank you in advance for your generosity. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Catherine has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, Catherine, alcoholic.
Hi, Catherine.
One. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into the public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Speaking group is run by a business meeting, which meets on the third Wednesday of each month at 6:30 p.m. in a hybrid format, both here at St. Paul's Church and online. This is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hand? Great. And now let's welcome our main speaker, Amy.
My name is Amy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Amy.
Is this right? Okay. I'm like really afraid to touch the microphone. My sobriety date is September 13th of 2011. My home group is You Get What You Give group out of East Falmouth. So I came over the bridge to see you all tonight. And I have a sponsor. I was in touch with her today, and I have the gift of sponsoring other women. And it's good to be back here, speaking with you again tonight. Thanks for having me and asking me. And shout out to my friend Cindy, who joined me from Cape Cod tonight and drove me here. It was quite the ride here. The last 15 minutes was like dead silent because there was so much traffic. It was really good to hear both of you tonight, and I identify with a lot. And my drinking started in high school, drinking in the woods, that was our thing. Windy Road 1, Windy Road 2, Joe's Rock, like that's where we like jammed out, and it was like really, truly for just the effect produced by alcohol, and it was just the mission was to get out of self. I didn't know that then, but that's really what it was all about for me. And I don't know if I drank differently than my friends. I hung around. I always seemed to surround myself with people who drank just as much as I did. But probably looking back, if I was an outsider looking in, my drinking was probably abnormal right from the gate. And I can tell you that like drinking did not work out for me or agreed with me. Junior year in high school, I ended up in a psychiatric ward at a hospital in Providence, Rhode Island, on suicide watch. There was a family meeting, and at that meeting, they talked about how they found a bottle of vodka in my closet, and they asked me why I drank, and my mom refreshes me with this story. I do not remember this, but my answer, I guess, was I feel like I have to. That makes sense to me today, looking back. From there, I can tell you that I straightened out for a little bit, did a little outpatient therapy and, was kind of monitored and watched for a little bit. But I can tell you, like a year later, getting ready for my senior prom, I was drinking alone in the bathroom, tying one on before pictures. And I don't think a lot of other people were doing that. I went to the zoo, went to UMass Amherst, and picked my dorm specifically for the Party Central. I lived in Southwest for any UMass people out there, and right away, first couple weeks, I was put on residential probation because I ended up in the hospital like 7 p.m. at night with alcohol poisoning. So again, drinking just did not agree with me. And, you know, I can tell you that from there, really, alcohol made decisions for me. It made decisions where I went on exchange for college, for student exchange. It made decisions where I did my internship. And it really, a lot of times, influenced where I ended up moving, because I moved around a lot for work. When I graduated college, I worked in the hotel hospitality field, which was heavy with drinking. And I made a host of fair weather friends, really. I moved to a new city, new town, go to the bar, meet some people, usually bartenders, make friendly with them, and find my people, and it ended up being different people on different nights. So there was the Tuesday night crowd, the Thursday night crowd, the Saturday night crowd, and no one really knew what I was up to. And to be honest with you, I didn't even know what I was up to. I can tell you, I used to say I had a lot of fun drinking, but really there was always consequences. So there was always damage done. And you know, a lot of people would, you know, I affected a lot of people's like peace of mind. I was that girl that would go out with you and then like disappear, like exit stage left, and you know, where's Amy? Like, I just ghost, and that's not cool. You need to tell people that you were out with, like, where you are, or if you disappear, you know, what's going on. And so, yeah, you know, I lived in Florida for many years. I lived in a lot of beautiful places and worked at a lot of nice places. But I was just such a drinker, and, and you know, that career, that big fancy career in spas and salons and resort spas moved me to Boston in 2010. And then, you know, it was just fast forward. You know, I got sober in, like I said, September 2011. And when I moved here in 2009, I think. Moved here in fall of 2009. And the first bar I went to was Rock Bottom Brewery. ominous warning. And I was thinking, I did, you know, I just moved from Fort Lauderdale, and I was thinking, like, what have I done? I've moved back to New England. And, you know, I was in a brand new playground where I didn't have to drive, and I could walk places, and just, you know, check out the new, like, drinking scene. And right away, I got into trouble with alcohol at work. Was hanging around with the wrong people. I know I was being sort of watched. Where I worked in Fort Lauderdale, it was encouraged to drink. Where I worked in Boston, it was not encouraged to drink. So I had a lot of trying to change, and by that point my disease had progressed where I really didn't have control or choice over it. You know, basically, like, through a series of life events that don't make me alcoholic, but that I, you know, in retrospect, or in, you know, they just like fueled my drinking. It just gave me reasons to drink through a series of life events that happened. And it was a very dark, cold winter that, you know, 2010 going to 2011. And you know, I know that, you know, my disease had progressed, it spread out to other things. That brought me down real fast. And I was living a complete double life. I was an executive in a meeting at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, texting people that I had no business texting, and like going off to Mission Hill to go to a bar to meet people, and then, you know, heading back home. And I was just, my disease had progressed where I couldn't drink and stop. And I would have these instances where I would have to be at work at like 7 a.m. And, you know, it's, you know, I find myself sitting, you know, in September 2011, I remember I had a red couch, and I'm sitting in my apartment in the South End of Boston. And, you know, I had just had a big pasta dinner. It was like a Tuesday night, and I had no plans of going out. Zero, and this thought crossed my mind, right? Next thing you know, I'm at the ATM. Next thing you know, I'm at the corner store. Next thing you know, it's 5:30 in the morning. The birds are chirping. And I got to get myself together and go to work. And I think I have everyone fooled. But at my desk at work, it was a Red Bull, a Gatorade, a Pedialyte, and a shot of espresso, and another Starbucks. So it was very obvious that something was going on. And, you know, that big fancy job asked me to leave. You know, they were like, you're not showing up. And I was devastated. And I was angry. And I ran to my primary care physician. I'm like, fill out this paperwork and call me depressed. I need to, like, have some time off. Really, that's what I did. And then she was the first person I told. You know, I can't stop doing drugs. I can't stop drinking alcohol. Like, I need help. And she told me, she's like, you should go to a meeting today. And I was like, noted. Thank you for the paperwork. Rushed back to work. Here's my paperwork. And then I went on a 3-week run. And it was a very, very dark time, those 3 weeks. And there was no like sudden decision for that I wanted to get sober. Like my friends that I was hanging out with, a couple of them were telling me I needed to get my life together, and I needed to, you know, stop what I was doing. And I just, you know, had a few choice words, and I pushed them away. And, you know, I ended up in a partial hospitalization program somehow. And they were, you know, testing me, and then I got kicked out of that program because I wasn't passing the test to stay in the program. And about like a week later, I called back to one of the counselors there, and I said, you know, I think I need some help. And he said, well, you know, you're not a patient here and I can't help you, but, you know, go to the emergency room. And back then you can go to the emergency room. And so, like, I poorly packed a bag, and like I had this bag packed on the floor of my bedroom, and it just sat there. And then I just sat on the couch and I just waited and watched TV. And then suddenly, instead of just walking to BMC, which I could have, I got in my car and I drove to St. Elizabeth's. And I told them, I'm helpless, I'm hopeless, and I can't stop. And what that did was it got me, you know, basically on like watch, where they sit someone outside your door to watch you, and got shipped off to a dual diagnosis detox. And that's where my journey began with Alcoholics Anonymous, because commitments came in. And that was like the best part of being there, because there really wasn't much to do except, you know, smoke cigarettes and drink coffee and color. And I used to make like cucumber eye packs, like out of like from the salad bar there. Like, I don't know. There was nothing to do. So the commitments were like a breath of fresh air. And for whatever reason, my heart and mind were open. And those people were speaking the language of the heart, and they were counting the message of recovery. And I'm forever grateful that I was listening and that those people came in. So if you're going to detoxes and you think that no one's listening, maybe there is. And, you know, they suggested I go to a meeting the day I got out of treatment, and they wanted me to go on to further treatment, and I told them that I was wicked busy and I had a cat. And I need to get back home, and I need to get back to work. And they were just like, okay. And I can tell you, when I left that detox, and my mom picked me up, I was like 35 years old. And you know, she was taking me back to my car, and I just thought, I'm like, I just need to lose her and go to the store and call my guy. I can't do this. And you know, I was at Packard's Corner, and I remember all of a sudden this thought that was not my thought, it was the total grace of God, like, came over me and said, maybe you should go to one of those meetings. And it was a Wednesday, and I went to Beginner's Mind. I don't know if that meeting's still there. And Copley Square, 6:30 p.m., and I was late. And I was sitting in the back, and I was institutionally dirty, shoving candy in my face, and I think I was just crying the whole time. And again, like the grace of God came over me and I raised my hand and I said, I'm new. I just got out of detox and I need help. And what happened there was that two women that were practicing the 12th step met me at my first step. And the game changer was that they gave me their phone number. They gave me their phone number and then they got my phone number. And I can tell you that night I walked home past, from Cropley Square to the South End, I walked home past like five bars, five ATMs, and five liquor stores, really, and I didn't drink. And yeah, those women texted me like, you're a miracle. And it was so great to meet you. And I was like, this is weird. And I remember back then I had a BlackBerry. And it was a pink case. And they invited me to Park Street the next day. And I went with Laura to Park Street. And I can tell you that she met me there, and at the end of the meeting, she had her bike there, but I remember she walked her bike all the way from Park Street through the common, through the garden, all the way to the South End, had coffee with me, and then went on her way. She spent like another like 2 hours with me. I don't know, I just think about that, and that like takes my breath away. Thanks. And, I can remember, like, she hugged me goodbye, and for, like, the first time in a long time, I felt, like, happy. And I felt like everything was going to be okay. And, the next night I went to Friday night, Copley Square, and that's where I met my first sponsor. She offered to be my sponsor. I said, I'm still looking. And, but I went with her the next day to set up a meeting, and then someone invited me to like a group conscience for Out of the Basement, and I was like 30 seconds sober. And that was interesting. And all these people just invited me from one meeting to the next, and I just followed the leader, really. And then about a month in, I got in enough pain emotionally where I asked that woman who would offer to be my sponsor, I asked her if she would sponsor me, and she said yes. And then she asked me for a cigarette. And she didn't even smoke. And so I was like, oh. But but I was like, oh, I like her, she smokes. And so, so she started me on my journey. She asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. I forget, we were at some burger joint near Park Street, and I was like stuffing a cheeseburger in my face, drinking an orange soda because that was my jam back then. And am I willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I'm like, mm-hmm, sure. And I didn't know what that was going to entail. But for the past 10 years now, I know what that means. And just this last year, it's all about going to any lengths to stay sober. And she started me in the book. We read the book line by line, page by page. And she said, you need a solution, and you need a solution fast. And she said, we're going to go through this step as quickly and as thoroughly as we can. And she started me on my journey. I can tell you that she's not my sponsor today, but she taught me so much. And I haven't been a day without a sponsor since. And And I went through my steps. I didn't wait a year to go through my steps. I didn't do a step a month. I was off and writing my fourth step by the time I think I was in my fourth month of sobriety. And I had gone back to that big fancy job. And then about the 90-day, when the 90-day probationary period was up, that big fancy job was like, see ya. And so I was like, it was a direct result of my active alcoholism, But the good thing is I was able to go back to that work and practice living amends before I left. So I'm really grateful for that chance to do that, and was able to make direct amends after, once I was on my ninth step. And so being free of that job gave me a lot of time to get busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went on a ton of commitments. I was involved in service with my home group, and I was busy writing my fourth step. And I would write for 15 minutes a day, and if I missed a couple days, I would write for 45 minutes, you know, on the third day. And, you know, I remember one night I called someone. I'm like, I had just written out someone's resentment, and it was like 10 o'clock on a Friday night. And I'm like, just wrote out someone's resentment. And they're like, wait, what are you doing writing your fourth step at 10 o'clock on a Friday night? I'm like, oh, noted. Like, that's probably not the best idea. So I got smart about when to write, and I would write before I went to work, or would write before I went to a meeting. And for me, it was just like enlightening. When I would be finished writing, I would push my notebook aside, and I would know that I'm an alcoholic. You know, I would know that I was doing the right thing. And as I went through the steps, I started to build this relationship with God. My experience wasn't that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and the obsession was lifted. Not my experience whatsoever. I hit my knees morning and night and prayed for that obsession to be removed. And I just remember it was like, just to back up a little, like around like day 70-something, I remember all of a sudden I was like, whoa, today I didn't think about a drink. Like, this is crazy. And I was like, maybe this can work for me. So that's when I realized that prayer, like, could work for me, and that I started to build this relationship with the God of my understanding, and that has just grown and morphed and changed and ebbed and flowed throughout the years. And and then I started sponsoring people. For some reason, people wanted what I had. I was crazy. I was still crying. I'm still crying. Still crying. And I went through my steps and I started sponsoring people, and what a gift that was. And I can tell you that I ended up in the hospital within my first year of sobriety, and I stayed sober. I went through a lot of health problems in early sobriety. In the first year I stayed sober, the first few years I had a lot of different jobs. If you have job problems in sobriety, like, I'm the girl to talk to. I have wrote a lot of inventory on work, and I have a lot of experience with, you know, working and trying to find my way in the workplace in sobriety. And in 2016, I moved to Cape Cod. I really had no plans to move to Cape Cod, but God had other plans, really. I knew no one in Cape Cod, and but one day my mom lived in Cape Cod, and I decided one day to send my resume off to my friend who worked at a treatment center down in Cape Cod, and I was down there 3 days later interviewing, and they asked me when I was moving there. I said March 1st, and next thing you know, I'm living in Cape Cod, but thank God, because there was an hour and a half and two bridges that protected me from what was going on in Boston, which at the time I didn't know, but the person I was in a relationship with at that time was already in an active relapse, and I had no idea. But in retrospect, looking back, I could see it. And I had that. I was safe and protected. Someone's not muted. That's okay. And so I moved to Cape Cod, and I joined. I joined a few different home groups, and then I found my place at my current home group, which is the You Get What You Give group, St. Anthony's Friday night. And right now we're back to pre-COVID numbers, about 150 people on a Friday night in that hall. And it's pretty amazing. And if you're on the Cape on Friday, June 9th, for any chance, for any reason, we're celebrating 73 years that the meeting's been on the Cape. So that's pretty cool. And I found my place there. And what that looked like was that I met one woman there, and I wanted what she had. And I thought, I could hang out with her. And so I had to call her and ask her for coffee. How awkward. And I met her for coffee, and they needed someone to sweep the floors. And I was like, I'm 4 years sober. I can sweep the floors. And the best decision I made there. You know, I got to get to know people after the meeting. I can remember when someone there invited me to a barbecue for the first time, and I'm like, oh my God, I have a friend. And slowly started, you know, fellowship started to grow up about me, and then I started meeting women, and I started, you know, taking women through the book down there. And, you know, I've had the gift of sponsoring this one woman, you know, now for a number of years there, and she's such a gift and light in my life. And one of the speakers down there, Kenny on the Cape, always talks about great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And you know, the great events that have passed for me are not things like shiny objects, cash and prizes, outside stuff. You know, the great events that have really happened for me over the past couple of years are really gifts from God. You know, I can tell you that when I got sober. I don't really usually talk about this, but I feel moved to talk about it tonight. When I got sober, my mental health issues came to surface pretty significantly, and because I'm sober and because I have you know, a relatively strong program, like I'm able to treat that today and survive that, and you know, I've been able to go to treatment for certain things. And when I was in treatment for a certain disorder, I was able to go to meetings. You know, counselors there were like, where are you going? It's like 6:30 in the morning. I'm like, I'm going to a meeting in Lexington. And you know, I still did my AA, and I still met with sponsees when I was there, and I stayed in touch with my sponsor. And you know, it's things like that those are the kind of things that I consider great events. And you know, along the ways, I've met, you know, people that needed help, right? Other people that needed help, you know, having trouble with drinking, having trouble with drugs. You know, suddenly they'd be my roommate, or suddenly they would just come into my life and I would be able to provide, you know, a listening ear and then a message of hope. You know, I met my significant other in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is my, like, you know, we've been together now, I think, 4 years, for, like, a healthy relationship. It's quite wild. Not wild that way, but you know what I mean. Poor choice of words, Amy. You know, how we met was we got each other's medallions at a anniversary celebration. And I was celebrating 7 years, and he was celebrating 4 years. And I got home, and I opened my card, and it was a 4-year medallion. I was like, what the heck? Where's my 7-year? And we found out who had it. And then after that, he started, you know, creeping me on Facebook and asking me out and all that stuff. And he was so awkward about it. And then really, I really fell for it all. And, you know, it's great having a partner in recovery that's, you know, also on the journey of the 12 steps and helping others. And this past year, you know, I was here about a year ago, and you know, what a difference a year makes. I have different, you know, I grew out my silver hair. I have a brand new, like, reconstructive foot. I had foot surgery last June 30th, last summer, and it was a major surgery. And yeah, Alcoholics Anonymous, like, showed up and showed out for me. You know, I had like a steady stream of visitors when I couldn't leave the house for 3 weeks. I had like flowers on my bureau like for like six weeks. People kept bringing me flowers and people giving me rides because it was my driving foot. Everyone really just showed off about how beautiful and how this program really works. And that's my sponsor calling. I'll call her later. And but and so, you know, that's just another, like, what I consider like a great event on this journey of recovery. And let's see, kind of winding down here. But you know what it looked like for me this morning, you know what it looked like for me today is, like, this morning I woke up and I had my, you know, water and coffee, and then I had my quiet time for the God of my understanding and a reading from Emmett Fox, And I asked for, you know, I asked for a lot of things in prayer, you know, and I've had the experience that prayer works for me and for others. And it's a powerful, powerful thing. And I was in touch with people from AA from the program today, and then, you know, Cindy and I hit the road and had dinner together and you know, made it here to a meeting about Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was a good day, right? And you know, I did pretty much the same thing yesterday. I didn't come all the way to Boston, but you know, I went to a meeting yesterday and I went to a meeting Monday, and you know, I have my home group on Friday, and I'll be in touch with women that I sponsor. And you know, AA isn't my whole life, but it's at the center of my life, and that works just fine for me. And you know, sobriety is such a precious gift, and I really want to respect it and hold on to it. And it's something that I hold dear to my heart, and I really don't want to let it go. It's been too good of a ride. So thanks again for listening, and everyone have a good night.
Hi everybody, my name is Chris, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Chris!
I don't have the thing written out, but I know that here at Beacon we do fellowship. And so after the meeting we're going to be going to Sunset Cantina. No, where are we going?
I don't know yet.
Okay, Sunset Cantina. Okay, well we're going to go to Sunset Cantina. If you want to get involved, it's a great way to get involved and have some fellowship. Also, we're doing a Walden Pond Memorial Day on the actual day of Memorial Beach Day. So that'll be good. That'll be fun. If you have any questions, we're going to pass around a sign-up sheet starting next. We'll do it at Monday night, but then we'll do it next week for anybody that might need a ride. It's just going to be a beach day. It's supposed to be nice. They've got a snack shack, I think, but feel free to bring your own snacks. And we're just going to hang out at the beach. It's a great way to get involved. There's also the Freedom Trail Freedom Trail Retreat, and that's going to be at Bill W's house. If you want more information on that, I can get you all the information on that as well. Another great way to get involved. And I think that, yeah, that's about it. Yeah.
Sarah Alcoholic.
Hey,
this Sunday is the post-conference assembly in East Boston. Do you know the actual address?
84 White.
What?
84 White Street.
84 White Street.
East Boston
High School. Thank you. So hope to see folks there. Our delegate will be giving a wrap-up of what happened in the General Service Conference. I'll be there. Katie will be there. Arisa will be there. Joe will be there. So come hang out. Come see us and learn. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, guys. Now, Lane and Alex for chips.
Hi, I'm Lane, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lane.
This is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Basic text of AA. If you do not own a copy, please do not leave without one. It sells for $9.50. Meaningless are free, and other AA literature is available at cost. Please visit our literature table after the meeting for more information. The Beacon Group marks milestones in recovery with chips. When you hear your time, please come up and get your chip. We'll start with 18 months. 11 months, 10 months, 9 months, 8 months, 7 months, 5 months. chip of all. Would anyone like to take a desire chip tonight?
Awesome. Congratulations. Hello, my name is Alex. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Alex.
Sponsorship is the cornerstone of AA's 12-step recovery program. If you are new to the AA, if you're new to AA or a group and you don't have a sponsor, we strongly suggest that you get one. Will anyone who is willing to speak to people about AA or sponsorship, please raise your hands. Thank you. AA anniversaries are celebrated on the last Wednesday of each month. This is an opportunity for members to come and express their gratitude for a minute or so. We suggest that all celebrants make a donation of $1 per year of sobriety to be sent to GSO. And of course, excellent cake will be served. In an effort to promote unity and enhance sobriety, Beacon Group sponsors anniversary watches. This is an opportunity for Beacon Group members on their 364th day of sobriety to sit with their sponsor and friends beginning at 9:30 p.m. to watch their first year of sobriety be ushered in. Anniversary watches take place at the Brighton IHOP at 1850 Soldiers Field Road. If you are about to celebrate an anniversary, please see our anniversary chair. Abby is not.
Sarah.
Sarah. Please see Sarah after the meeting or email vganniversaries@gmail.com. Thank you.
This side of the street to chat and use the cigarette receptacles provided to respect those who live in the area. Please remember our custom of thanking our speakers. They will line up out there maybe at somewhere. And now for all of you, join the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,